we've talked about many times before on this show how some people out there in politics are just irredeemably stupid.
Oh my God, I know.
Like there is no saving them. There's no amount of education that can help them. It's almost as if they were meant to be this way. It's who they are.
It's almost as if they are just wired to never functionally ever be able to question their beliefs.
And I feel like this is the case with the person behind Libs of TikTok.
100%.
And this isn't just speculation here. She just, Chaya Raichik, that's the person behind the account, just sat down with journalists from, I think, the New York Times or the Washington
Taylor
Post.
Taylor Lorenz. I don't know where she is, but.
She sat down with Taylor Lorenz, which is already crazy because, like, they've had a drama for, like, a year now. Uh-huh. You remember all that?
I don't really, but I know that the Libs of TikTok lady, Chaya Raichik, she pulled up with a shirt that I think had Taylor Lorenz crying on it.
Well, because Taylor Lorenz was being harassed like crazy after she was doing journalism on the Libs of TikTok account.
Which is such a crazy move to pull for the caliber of interview that she gave.
Oh yeah.
She pulled up. That's energy right there. That you are pulling up wanting smoke just for her to answer every question with
I don't know, or like it's literally gay porn in schools.
Yeah, do you want to see this gay porn?
That was the craziest part, right? Like, so for those that didn't catch it, it's on Taylor Lorenz's YouTube channel if you want to go look at it. It's actually really interesting interview in terms of like getting into the mind of a conservative.
Yeah.
Apparently this was only supposed to be like 10-15 minutes. It was like an hour.
It's low key like hard to get through just because Chaya Raichik, she is so devoid of charisma.
Oh yeah.
There was not a single answer. There like usually when we review right wing content, that shit's funny. Mm-hmm. When we watch a Matt Walsh video, I'm giggling, I'm kicking my feet, I'm laughing because it's so absurdly dumb.
Yeah.
This one, it's just devoid
it's a tough
of
watch.
All emotion.
It's a tough watch, yeah.
I swear, but it's worth it though.
Yeah, Taylor Lorenz was like, well, like, you know, where do you see your career going? What are you going to do with this in, say, 5 or 10 years? And she's like, I'm not going to
answer
that.
That's too personal.
Yeah, I'm not going
to
answer that.
I don't want to get into that.
And shit like that.
And she'll talk about like, oh my God, you should get the blue check mark on Twitter. Elon Musk, free speech warrior. I'm making so much money on X. She's like, oh really? Like, what are you doing? Like, is it like good for you? She's like, that's personal information. I cannot give that out.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because, you know, they got to the more like ideological stuff.
Yeah.
Where Taylor Lorenz was asking about like trans people and the coverage of trans people from the Libs of TikTok account. And her argument was basically just they shouldn't be allowed to do that. Trans people generally, not just kids, but above 18 as well. Like, you shouldn't be allowed to do that because they're living a lie. And it's like, well, I mean, if somebody hated, say, Jewish people, which Chaya Raichik is, they could say Judaism is a lie. Should they be able to legislate to that effect?
Be able to live as a Jewish person because it is a lie. Like,
we lie to ourselves all the time, bro.
Ridiculous. I delude myself into thinking things all the time. No,
exactly. It's just the interview to me showed a version of Chaya Raichik, and maybe not even a version, showed, I suppose, the real face of Chaya Raichik as just a stupid person that hasn't really thought about any of this is just solely the sort of prototypical American suburban white reactionary.
Well, there were like, so many times. What she is. There were so many times where Taylor Lorenz asked her about specific things that she had either tweeted or retweeted, and like, say she'd ask her about something that was on her Twitter. Chaya Raichik would be like, "I didn't tweet that.
Yeah,
I didn't tweet that. I just retweeted it."
Oh my God! Yeah, there was that
and
one
she couldn't
thing.
Explain there
was,
anything.
There was a mass shooting at one point at, you know, United States. Of course, there's a mass shooting, but there was one that the Libs of TikTok account on Twitter tweeted about. And she had posted that the shooter was trans.
Yeah.
Basically just saying the shooter is trans. The shooter was not trans.
Well,
this is one of those moments where they're trying to say, like, look, a trans person's being criminal, so trans people are bad.
Just to
she was wrong.
Contextualize this, Taylor Lorenz brought up that Libs of TikTok tweeted that because Libs of TikTok said that you shouldn't be able to lie about her on social media.
Yeah.
Like, you shouldn't be able to do that at all. People constantly lie about me, like, all the time. And Taylor Lorenz said, okay, what about this instance where you lied? Like, that's still on your Twitter. Will you take it down? And she's like, well, no, it has a community note, so I won't take it down.
Yeah, so to me, the argument there that it sort of reveals is that she's like, everyone else is lying, so I'm going to lie too.
Yeah.
Like, not that we should lie less, but that I'm just going to do it if other people are doing it.
Oh, mainstream media lies, so like, why can't I as like independent media lie? But also, independent media is better, and there are less apparatuses to check my lies, except for community notes.
Yeah, she also called herself a journalist.
That shit was
which
crazy.
I thought was really, really good.
That shit was nuts.
Yeah.
And then there was the moment where she's talking about trans people, and Taylor Lorenz is continuing to like grill her on the issue a little bit, and she's like, okay, what about the adults that have transitioned and they're living happy lives, like not hurting anybody?
Mm-hmm.
She just couldn't answer.
Wait, they're living a lie.
They're living
a
lie.
That was the only argument she had.
They're just living a lie.
Yeah. Like, oh, my God. It was so bad. Of course, there was the gay porn section.
The gay porn section was wicked.
Taylor Lorenz is like, well, we know that, you know, comprehensive sex education is good for children. You know, it decreases sexual abuse rates, teen pregnancy, this sort of thing. And she was like, well, they're literally showing gay porn.
She said, you're literally showing gay porn. She said she wanted to just get rid of sex education and just leave it up to the parents. And Taylor Lorenz said, okay, well, say you could completely remake sexual education in your vision, how would you do it? And she's like, we should get rid of sex education. She could not answer a question.
Yeah.
She has never thought about these positions. Like, if you have such strong opinions about sexual education, you could at least say, like, that should only be, like, straight shit, you know what I'm saying? Like,
they're given
abstinence only. Like, there are so many ways you could do it other than, I don't really know.
I swear anyone can get a platform nowadays.
No thoughts.
Don't gotta try.
No thoughts behind those eyes.
Oh, like, my God. Of
completely
course.
Completely soulless.
Libs of TikTok is best known for being a stochastic terrorist.
Yes.
Right. And that was part of the interview where Taylor Lorenz is asking, like, hey, there's a sort of track record of you posting about individuals or institutions, and then those individuals or institutions getting an influx of bomb threats, death threats, this sort of thing. And her answer there was like, well, how do you know it's me?
Well, her answer was, how do you know it's me? And also, well, mainstream media posts about me and then people threaten me.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're a public figure. And
that's
then she
the
said,
right? Yeah.
She went on to say that, well, if you're posting anything on social media, you're a public figure.
Well,
if you post anything, no matter how many likes or views it gets, no matter how many followers you have, no matter how much attention you have on your profile, that I can do whatever I want because you're technically a public figure. You posted that in the public.
Yeah, well, and I'm pretty sure that she doesn't just target people that are like in the public eye by her definition, right?
Yes. Which like, is everyone, like, literally everyone.
She'll have like schools or hospitals get a bunch of bomb threats because, like, I don't know, they're transitioning children, quote unquote, or something like that. And these schools or hospitals, they're not like posting on social media. She just is calling them out and then doing nothing to urge her followers to not resort to violence.
But then the mainstream media does it to her, so it's okay.
Yeah.
Well, the lamestream media does it to her. But the gay porn stuff, I gotta go back to it because Taylor Lorenz is asking her, like, okay, like something about schools, like you banning books. And she's like, no, I'm banning gay porn, blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. They go back and forth about it. And she's like, well, what about how they're showing fucking gay blowjobs in schools? And you want to see?
Yeah.
And then she just whips out her fucking phone and knows where it is in her camera roll or on her Twitter or whatever. She's like, look at this. And it's just, brother.
Yeah, it's either she had that shit saved just to show people.
Yeah.
Or she knew exactly what to look up in Google Images. Like, she looked up, what, genderqueer blowjob or some shit like that, the graphic novel.
Oh, my God.
That's excellent.
Oh,
perfect.
And the way she's framing it is the way that, I guess, like, every right-winger frames it, but it wasn't her idea, naturally, because no thoughts behind those.
Of course, yeah.
Eyes. Oh, my God. It's just that, these books are available to literally every child. They are just handing out pamphlets of gay sex to literally every kid in every age. Come on, bro.
It's so silly.
It's so silly.
Yeah, and she kept saying, like, oh, there's a lot of instances. Just look it up, which is like, that's what you say when you don't have anything left.
Yeah, you have no stats. It's just look it up. And then you look it up, and it's what? What pops up? Twitter?
Yeah.
It's like when people are talking about immigration, like, oh, well, these immigrants are doing crazy crimes like everywhere. I saw a tweet earlier this week that was like 5 instances of immigrants doing like heinous crimes, I will admit, like murder.
Yeah.
It's like, this is 5 instances, brother.
Yeah.
Crime is down in New York.
Well, it's like every population is going to have people that commit crimes.
Exactly.
That's not the point. On the whole, immigrants commit less crimes than American, like U.S.-born American citizens.
Uh-huh.
It's absurd. Like, you can take anybody from any population and show them committing some type of crime and try to spin a narrative about the population more broadly. In fact, that's exactly what the Nazis did with Jewish people. But that's never going, that's always going to be fallacious, and it's always going to be bigoted.
Exactly. It's what the Nazis did with with Jewish people. It's what fucking right-wingers do with immigrants right now. And it's what people like Libs of TikTok, also right-wingers, are doing with, I don't know, gay teachers.
Yes. Yeah.
What one gay teacher that, I don't know, does something cringe.
Or not even that. The gay teacher will post like, if your parents don't love and accept you, I will as a teacher.
Yes.
And then they get fucking fired and a billion death threats. Like, they don't feel safe ever again. Like, this
God damn.
Fucking absurd. And it's so validating to me to see the Libs of TikTok interview with Taylor Lorenz, and Chaya Rychik is everything I expected her to be.
Yeah,
you
know
what I mean?
She was so bad in this interview that conservatives got mad at her.
Yes, yeah.
Because
she couldn't do the argument.
She should have just shut the fuck up.
Uh-huh.
She should have just walked away. Honestly, there was another moment where Taylor asked her about, like, her Oklahoma, is it school board position?
Library board.
Library board position. Is she the head of the library board?
She's just a member on it, and I think the way it works is like they vote to approve what books go into schools.
Okay. Well, either way, she's a member on the library board, a public official, a position of power.
Yeah.
Albeit small power, but still a position of power. She's like, do you have any ties to Oklahoma? Have you been to Oklahoma? And she said, yeah, I've been there like once. I've been to Oklahoma one time.
So ridiculous.
You don't have to say that. You could, personal information.
And she was like, oh, I didn't think there were any qualifications.
Because Taylor said, well, to be on the library board, you're supposed to do this. You're supposed to have been this, done this.
Education, blah, blah, profession, blah, blah, type blah, blah. Shit, yeah.
And she's like, well, I used to be a teacher like a while ago, maybe. Uh-huh. Yeah. And then she said, I wasn't aware there were qualifications.
Yeah, that's
what
ridiculous.
Are we doing,
it's
man?
Like anything to avoid saying that this is purely a political appointment because she services a broader agenda. Yeah, legitimately stupid person. I was baffled by this interview. I mean, props to Taylor Lorenz for not like losing her mind during this.
Yeah.
I don't know how I would have responded in real time to some of the shit that she was saying, but I mean, I know she's a journalist, but she did very well. And
I feel like I would have been stun locked.
Yeah.
I feel like I would have gotten just an answer because so
especially when I get shown the blowjob, I'd have been like. What are you doing, man?
Like,
that's a stun lock.
What the fuck is going on here?
Well, hold up. New debate technique unlocked? Just whip out a photo of porn? That's ridiculous, man. But it didn't work. Taylor Lorenz kept chugging along.
She stayed mentally strong.
Uh-huh.
She stayed mentally strong. I couldn't have. I'd have lost it.
No, stronger than me, man.
I'd have started laughing. I'd have lost it. It'd have been done. I'd have been done for. And then the fact that half of the questions that Taylor asked, Shia just like, it's like, well, what about how the media attacks me?
Mm-hmm.
What about how I'm the real victim here?
Jesus Christ, God, man.
Damn,
Shia Rychik. What a hero of the right. Libs of TikTok, really dumb person. If you want to watch the interview, you can go do it, but oh my goodness.
Whew.
Oh my goodness. Whew. Welcome back to Head in the Office, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to another episode. We got bad news to talk about.
Yes, we did.
And election news to talk about. And if you're tired of hearing about that, strap in.
If you're tired of hearing
Super
about
Tuesday's
election
coming
news,
up, baby.
It's 2024. It's election year.
Lock in. I need
come
you
back
all
in 2025.
To lock in. So we got a loaded episode for you today.
But speaking of loaded episodes, loaded content.
Oh, yeah.
Dare I say, if you've been fiending for that extra little bit of Hitto,
mm-hmm.
We were guests on another show this week.
We were. We went on the Left Wing Pod. You can find them on YouTube. That's the title of their show, Left Wing
yes.
Pod. We'll drop it in the description as well if you just want to click. You know, you're a lazy liberal. You don't feel like typing. I think they're going to be releasing the little session we recorded with them in separate clips, different topics
like
that we talked about.
Four different 20-minute segments.
Yeah.
Right about there.
But also the live stream replay that we did might be available as well. So we were
true.
Guests on another show. Big news.
Oh, my gosh. Hitto going fucking statewide.
Yeah, TJ and John, cool guys. So give them a follow, give them a subscription, and check us out if you want to hear what we had to say about all the stuff we talked about.
Exactly.
Similar stuff, you know, we're consistent, ever consistent.
Similar mm-hmm. news, you know, different mm-hmm. things that not happen in the week.
Yeah, but I will remind you all before we get into the news today, you can get some merch at headintheoffice.com.
Mm-hmm.
Look, it helps us out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been thinking for a while about doing like a winter type merch drop. You know what I'm saying?
That's true.
Where it's like hoodies and stuff. Cause people like hoodies. People like crew
necks.
Now
we got to wait
like
a whole 9 months again.
But now it's fucking 60 degrees outside.
Now it's 70 degrees in fucking February. And then 20 the next day.
On March 3rd. It's my third day out here. And it's fucking 50
God,
degrees. It's ridiculous.
Out here 3 days. This is ridiculous.
So anyways, all that to say, it's getting warm. If you're in the southern states, it's probably pretty warm right now. So get some t-shirts, get some hats.
Oh my God, come on, get a little dad cap.
You're going to be drinking water in the summer, I hope.
Yes.
So you don't get dehydrated. You'll need some stickers to put on your water bottle.
And you
sticker
know,
sheet, Hitto.
If you can't support, maybe you don't want to support, my strongest condemnation, you can support us completely for free.
You can.
By leaving a 5-star review.
Mm-hmm.
Of which we have none today.
That's unacceptable. Unacceptable.
Absolutely unacceptable.
The Cheerios were soaked this morning, I will
God
say.
Damn,
I was sobbing
man.
Into my bowl. I can't believe that you guys would leave us behind in our time of need.
I can't believe you just let me down like mm-hmm. this.
Yeah,
like,
no.
Oh my
this
God.
Is an act of terror.
Uh-huh.
On Head in the Office.
Oh my.
You're trying
doing,
to take us down. We're being canceled.
Y'all are doing stochastic terror against
uh-huh,
us by
yeah.
not speaking.
Yeah, so to make us feel better, how about you check out patreon.com/headintheofficepod?
Oh my goodness.
Something to consider. Maybe get early access to episodes, chat with us in private DM. I don't know.
I don't know, maybe, you know.
Look into it.
Check it out.
Time to get into the news.
I think so. I think so. We're going to start a little heavy off the top with another update from Gaza.
Yeah, geopolitics today, variety of things, bad. None
just
of it
remember,
good.
Number one, geopolitics, always coming through with the news, but we're going to have to get into a little bit of tragedy today. So, on Thursday, aid trucks carrying food, flour, and canned goods were able to finally enter the Gaza Strip under the surveillance of the IDF. Yep. Just aid trucks being able to enter the Gaza Strip at this point is a big borderline move. Fucking unprecedented.
A miracle, yeah.
Considering, I think it's like two or so aid trucks were getting through on average per month.
Yeah, no, it hasn't been anything major. And the U.S., well, I mean, Biden's been criticized for a lot of things.
Yeah.
Biden's been criticized for a lot, but he also hasn't been doing airdrops until I think recently he agreed to doing them.
He just announced on Friday, 2 days ago, that he'll be doing airdrops.
But that's part of the reason that the humanitarian crisis is so bad, other than, of course, Israel doing a genocide,
yes,
is because so little food and other resources have gotten in. Because Hamas is just going to take it, quote-unquote.
Hamas is going to take it. Also, I know another reason why aid trucks haven't been getting in is because Israel will, like, go through, they'll search them, and if there is anything that they can deem, like, I guess, like, contraband, like, if there are scalpels in the aid truck, you know, things that are necessary within hospitals, because they're sharp and they can be used to do damage, Israel will turn that truck around. They will not just confiscate the scalpels. They will not just the goods. I got it on the Majority Report. I was listening to Sam Cedar this morning. If they deem anything just wrong in there that they can't have, they will turn the entire truck around and not let it in.
See, and like liberals in the U.S. and certainly conservatives will justify this sort of thing by saying, like, you know, they're not necessarily violating any portion of international law if there's like a reason for turning away the trucks, this kind of thing. But it's like,
but that's not a reason for turning away a truck. Well, that's a reason. That's not even a reason for confiscating scalpels, because again, necessary medical equipment.
Right. But my point here is like they'll find some like subsection in international law to justify whatever individual act you bring up that Israel is doing. Right. But they get revealed to be openly genocidal when you look at just the statements of like defense ministers and shit in Israel. Ben Gavir's like the most fascist guy of all time.
Ever.
But there's also, I can't remember which one, a while ago, one of the ministers in Israel said like we need to put Palestinians on a diet. I think one of them said that they're trying to encourage cannibalism within the Gaza Strip. Like they're open about what they're doing. They're starving them out. That's the intention here. And it just, they leave it up to, I guess, Western liberals and conservatives to justify their actions post hoc.
Fucking, it's absolutely fucking sick. Either way, borderline unprecedented that aid trucks were actually able to get into the Gaza Strip this morning, into, I think, Rafah. Mm-hmm. It's Rafah or Gaza City. I'm not exactly sure where. But once the aid trucks reached the drop-off location, I you can imagine what happened. It was naturally swarmed by people who have been literally starving for the last 5 months. The UN estimates, the United Nations estimates that over 500,000 Palestinians right now are at risk of starvation this moment.
Also, I saw the AP, I think it was the AP reported on some of the situation in Gaza, and there was one person they interviewed that said he had been eating animal food.
For the last 2 months, they've been eating animal feed to subsist.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Not human food, obviously.
Literally inhumane conditions, dare I say.
Yeah. Definitionally.
Definitionally inhumane conditions, but I digress.
Crazy, man.
IDFs, so people are swarming this food truck. They are desperate to get this food. Natural human response. IDF troopers claim to have felt threatened by this, by a group of Palestinians who they say were walking towards their position, and they opened fire on the crowd of hundreds of people.
Yeah.
The estimates place the death total at over 100, with 700 people being injured. Israel claims that most of the deaths were results of the trampling that happened as Palestinians rushed the food trucks. That is just a blatant lie. Israel then released drone footage on, I think, Twitter, that was heavily edited and cut at strategic locations to try and claim that trampling happened. But then Al Jazeera immediately released like full video that they actually had showing the IDF just opening fire.
Jesus Christ.
Just opening fire on a crowd of hundreds, if not thousands of fucking people.
Yeah. Well, and they can say, well, we shouldn't trust Al Jazeera because that's Hamas.
Yes.
Because Al Jazeera is a Middle East publication.
Al Jazeera's Hamas. The aid trucks are Hamas.
Of course. Also, I think the official line from Israel is that they shot into the air, like warning shots.
Oh, I got it. I'll get there. Okay. We'll get there. So Israel does acknowledge that they did, in fact, open fire. Again, they claim that they fired on a smaller offshoot of civilians that started to approach their position, and they only did so because they felt endangered by the crowd. In an earlier statement, the IDF claimed that soldiers opened fire because Palestinians were, quote, looting the aid trucks. Now, I just want to take a moment to talk about the the absolute absurdity of that statement, that these Palestinians were looting the food that was being given to them. You know, on Christmas, I woke up December 25th. I looted my fucking Christmas tree.
Oh, yeah.
I looted the presents my girlfriend got me.
Hey, when I'm home for a little bit and my mom brings groceries in, I'm looting those groceries.
When I went to visit my mom a couple weeks ago, I fucking looted her pantry, dog.
That's so absurd. What are you talking about looting? It's for them.
Wait, what do you mean looting? This is food that is there to be given to them.
Oh, yeah.
They're taking it off the truck because they can.
Well, and even if there was like a process for this, that, you know, we're going to go to a specific drop point, set up whatever, and hand it out to people. People are starving. You should reasonably expect, as a fucking quote unquote advanced military, that the people you're actively bombing are going to want access to this stuff, and they're going to try to get it as quick as possible. They got kids that are starving. What are we doing, man?
I'm saying literally subsisting off animal food, not human food, animal food.
Animal food,
food that is not designed for humans.
Yeah, like, and while the aid trucks that have come in have been seriously insufficient, what are we talking about?
Israel can justify a literal massacre, because that's what this was. It was a fucking massacre.
Did you see the name that it was given?
Dead. The flower massacre?
The flower
massacre. Yeah. Over a hundred are fucking dead. Hundreds of people injured after this. Mm-hmm. Thousands may be traumatized. Like, because they're looting trucks that were there to give food to them?
Yeah.
Absurd. But anyway, despite Israel's claims that trampling was responsible for the majority of deaths, doctors at the barely functioning Gaza hospitals said that most of the deaths were results of gunshot wounds. Eyewitnesses that were interviewed at hospitals had gunshot wounds.
Yeah, that doesn't happen from trampling, big dog.
No, definitely
not. You don't think you can do that to somebody by trampling?
I don't think you can trample somebody and leave a fucking hole in their chest.
Yeah, no, I don't think so.
I don't think that's how that works. But I'm not a doctor.
Call me a communist or something.
I'm not a doctor. Call me a filthy
liberal.
Call
me Hamas.
call me Hamas. Call me Hamas. Oh, my goodness. CNN reports that witnesses also say people were killed as the aid trucks rammed through civilians in an effort to get away from Israeli gunfire, which is honestly, again, a natural response when all of a sudden you're not doing anything. You are there. You are a UN aid worker or whatever organization is sending it. You are an aid worker here to distribute food to people who need it. Yeah. And all of a sudden, gunshots are flying your way.
Yeah.
What the fuck, man?
Yeah.
What the? Well, those deaths, despite the aid workers being panicked and running their trucks maybe through a crowd, those deaths are the IDF's fault.
Yeah. And it's like, this is eerily similar to instances of police violence that we talk about, right?
Yes.
The police do something to escalate around people that are already scared or nervous or for whatever reason are emotionally unstable. And then things just strictly get worse because they escalated, right?
Yeah.
And they wouldn't be put into that position if they weren't, or the event wouldn't have happened, the trampling, the deaths, the shooting wouldn't have happened if they weren't put into that position. And importantly, in Israel, this wouldn't have happened if the genocide was never going on.
Yes, it's like when a cop approaches a traffic stop and fucking is pointing his gun at you through the
window. Right, it's escalation, yeah.
And you're just sitting there like, what the fuck, man? I don't know what to do. You're on edge now.
Yeah, especially when, I mean, you have hundreds of people here, you have trucks here, you have soldiers here. If soldiers start shooting in what is an active war zone, you're going to expect aid workers and civilians to freak the fuck out.
Mm-hmm.
I would freak the fuck out.
That's what I'm saying.
Like, what do you, I think anybody would
anyone
freak the fuck
in
out.
That position.
The one person that's not supposed to freak the fuck out is the trained soldier.
Mm-hmm.
And they did.
The trained soldier who basically put themselves in that position.
Yes. Yeah.
Who is there to secure the area.
Yeah.
Who, oh my God, it's absolutely absurd. But anyway, so Israel tries to justify their actions by saying soldiers felt threatened. CBS asked Israel how exactly they went about defining that there was an imminent threat to soldiers, to which an IDF spokesperson responded by saying anyone who approached the soldiers after being told not to was deemed a threat. This is Fallujah. This is any military age man who comes near me is getting got. Any military age man is a target. Fundamentally absurd.
Uh-huh.
Absurd premise, right? Witnesses say the IDF just opened fire quickly and without provocation.
Yeah.
Which I'm honestly more apt to believe.
Yeah, and it's hard to believe what the IDF puts out officially because they do things like edit video yes. that they post on Twitter as their sort of justification, but also because they've lied so many times before.
And also because, as we've gone over just in this segment, they're already giving conflicting stories.
Yeah.
There are so many conflicting accounts from IDF spokespeople of what actually happened here, mm-hmm. whereas doctors say it was all gunshot wounds. Eyewitnesses say it was gunshot wounds. People who were shot say it was gunshot yeah. wounds. I don't know. Like, who do we believe here?
I'm sorry, dog. After the Mein Kampf thing, the yes. Hitler iPad and everything with the El Shifa Hospital
Fentanyl
and the
rockets.
Calendar, there is a list of, like, I can't trust them. Like,
no.
I have no reason. Like, I was already not inclined to trust Israel because of what they do to Palestinians. But based off how many times they've just blatantly lied for propaganda reasons to produce agitprop. Like, why would I believe that they didn't just massacre civilians?
Oh my God. And it's insane. Ben-Gvir, Israel's chief fascist, literally, came and made a statement, like, thanking the brave IDF soldiers, thanking the brave IDF soldiers that were, like, on the scene, and I think said something that implied or explicitly said, this is why we should not be getting aid to these people.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
this is what happens when we give them aid. You can't do that. Yeah. That is just a blatant violation of the UN provisional order right there.
Yeah, well, and he came out and said, like, we should give uncritical support to brave IDF soldiers.
Uncritical support.
He didn't say uncritical exactly, but that was the idea, right? Is like, we shouldn't be criticizing
crazy.
Them.
What does Ben-Gvir have a position within the government? He's a chief something?
Something of defense, I
is
don't
he
know.
The defense minister?
I don't know exactly, but I mean, he's been around for a while, and he's a fucking demon.
Big position of power.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it's fucking ridiculous. It's absolutely insane. Yeah. But anyway, you mentioned the tanks earlier. CNN reports that there was also a tank on the scene that the IDF claims was there just to secure the humanitarian corridor that the aid trucks were following to get mm-hmm. to the drop-off location. The IDF said in a statement, the tank fired shots. I don't know if this is like a fucking tank round going off down the big ass barrel or if this is soldiers on the tank firing shots.
I have to imagine it's soldiers.
That's what I think, too.
You know what I mean?
Because a tank round, that'd be bigger. Videos show soldiers firing.
Yeah.
Anyway, I digress. IDF says that the tank fired shots only when soldiers noticed that people were being trampled in an effort to disperse the crowd. Again, I think this is kind of disproved by the video that Al Jazeera mm-hmm. posted. But anyway, I want you all to think about this for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
Think for a moment. You've been starving for 5 months. You're
yeah.
eating animal
Yeah, if
food
you
to
can
subsist.
Imagine that, being an American, probably.
Yeah, yeah. If you can imagine somehow what it feels to be living in literal hell, go ahead and try,
yeah.
right? And then finally, you see there's a glimmer of hope. There's a food drop-off, the first one in a while that you will have access to. You
mm-hmm.
are running. You are trying to get it. You are desperate to get a bag of fucking flour so you can subsist off bread instead of animal feed.
Yeah.
People are gonna, it's gonna be a hectic situation. Tensions are gonna be high. You are gonna be on edge. Soldiers that are there, that are a part of the country that is actively killing, basically, that is trying to kill everyone you've ever known
yeah,
and loved,
push you out, yeah.
are watching your every fucking move here. And the crowd gets a little dense and they start firing.
Yeah.
What are you gonna do? Me personally, I'm calming down.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'm locking in.
Me personally, I'm realizing, oh, these guys are here to help me.
Jesus Christ. Well, and that's like what Israel expects them to do.
Yeah.
Is like, just lock in and be chill. Like,
well,
what do you mean?
The explanation here is like, oh, we fired warning shots. So they, if you see me personally, I'm there. I'm a Palestinian. I'm calming down. I'm saying, guys, let's get in a single file line.
Yeah.
Let's evenly distribute yeah. this food, man. These guys are here to help us.
And even if what Israel says is true, they didn't fire on the crowd. They just shot into the air. Like, try to imagine if you can. I know it's hard that the IDF soldiers here were yeah. very disciplined and not scared. They just fired into the air because maybe
know,
there was
notoriously
a panic.
IDF soldiers, very disciplined.
Yeah. Firing into the air is still going to cause a panic and the trampling
uh-huh.
is their fault. It doesn't make a difference. They,
uh-huh.
they escalated. Why would you fire into the air?
And it's like, if you are so worried about these aid trucks, if trampling actually happening, one, very predictable.
Mm-hmm.
One, anyone who heard that there was going to be a food drop-off would have thought that people were going to swarm the truck.
I could have told you that, and I'm just a dude.
I'm just saying.
I could have, like, maybe a bad idea.
I'm just some fucking guy who bought a microphone.
Uh-huh.
Like, it's, that's the natural human reaction. They could have set up, they could have had, so if they wanted to have soldiers on the scene, they could have had them there actually distributing the food to these
mm-hmm.
civilians.
Mm-hmm.
They did not need to be waiting on the side. They just let this truck get in there and they just let them have free reign over it.
Yeah,
like,
man.
There are so many things that the IDF could have done to prevent trampling that didn't happen. That
yeah.
they used to justify the massacre that they did.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this story for a couple of days. And at first, My initial reaction is like, that's just the IDF planning really fucking poorly and being incompetent like always.
Yes.
But the more we dive into this and talk about like reactions from Israeli prime minister or reactions from like the cabinet, reactions from the media, it makes me feel like they did this intentionally.
Well, because it's like there's that quote that's like, never attribute to malice what can be attributed to ignorance.
I don't think
this can be attributed to ignorance. I genuinely don't. I don't think you can be so ignorant in a situation like this to where you just think like, oh, this is going on, I'm going to start fucking blasting.
Yeah.
There's got to be, we already know how much fucking hate is in these soldiers' hearts.
Mm-hmm.
We already know the blatant genocidal rhetoric that they've been found plausible to have.
They're raised on blood and soil arguments.
Exactly.
Like, they're raised on that shit.
They have a conscription army.
Yeah.
They're coming through. They are quite literally indoctrinated, mandatory by the government to absolutely hate these people. I have to think that there had to be some form of malice in this, in the initial act, because there is absolutely malice in these explanations.
Mm-hmm.
The explanations amount to, well, these people are animals anyway,
mm-hmm.
so it's fine. These people are animals, so we did this, so we should never give them aid again.
Famously, something Ben Shapiro said also, I think he called Palestinians animals that live in dirt huts or something.
That's
like that.
That's true, and that they should like level bulldoze Gaza or mm-hmm. some shit like that, but you know, he doesn't want to talk about that anymore.
Yeah, put a Costco there or something.
Put a Costco in there. Jesus Christ. But anyway, the event, it's just fundamentally absurd.
Yeah.
Absolutely absurd. And so in response to this, President Biden, you know, because it takes something history-making like this for President Biden to have a response. During his meeting with Italy's prime minister, he announced that we will be airdropping food aid into Gaza, acknowledging that the current situation is untenable. He also echoed concerns that the UN has been saying, with their estimate that over 500,000 Palestinians are facing imminent starvation. That's a quarter of the population.
Yeah, and it's like, this isn't news. You know what I mean? Like, this event, what happened, the flower massacre obviously is big news, but it's sort of just an extension of their pre-existing foreign policy.
Yeah, and it's entirely predictable.
Well, you're right.
Fucking predictable.
Yeah.
And it's also insane that this is the event that pushed the death toll over 30,000.
Oh, my God.
30,000 registered deaths. That is just people that we know have died. That does not account for all of the people lost under rubble,
mm-hmm.
for people who have probably died of diseases, people who have been just lost in the panics to get shoved 2.1 million people into like the furthest south point in Gaza.
Yeah, and then also bomb the point where you told them would be safe.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like, this is ridiculous. I think even more people have been injured. Like,
yeah.
Absurd situation.
It took this massacre for Joe Biden to be like, okay, maybe we can airdrop some stuff.
Yeah, it took this for him to finally come through with something that's at least a tangible thing that we can do to help the literal millions of people struggling as a result of Israel's genocide.
Right.
But I'd be remiss to not look at this just in context. Like, dropping food aid is not enough.
I mean, it's a good step, but yeah.
It is a good step, and I'm glad we're taking this step, but we wouldn't have needed to get this far if we had adequately dealt with Israel.
Yeah.
If we had adequately used our economic levers of power to stop giving them money, to stop funding the bombs they drop.
Especially because we know, in terms of humanitarian aid, we know that they don't want humanitarian aid in, right?
Yeah.
The flow of trucks has been incredibly small. They said the major Palestinian refugee or Palestinian relief organization through the UN, they barred them from entering Gaza because they called them all Hamas. And the United States hasn't been doing anything and now has only decided to do airdrops for humanitarian aid. But even that is going to be limited because you can only drop so much.
You can only drop so much, and airdrops are only so efficient.
Right.
A lot of the stuff that gets dropped just kind of doesn't work.
And I have to believe that, like, he's not going to be sending plane and plane and plane and plane to make sure that they can match match, right?
I think like one cargo plane worth of an airdrop I saw matches like two aid trucks.
Right, which isn't a lot.
We should absolutely be sending plane and plane and plane and plane.
We
should be
doing
literally everything that we can. And should Israel say we can't, fuck you.
Like, yeah, but as soon as like Israel wasn't allowing humanitarian aid trucks in, I don't know why this wasn't the immediate impulse.
Like, come
to
on,
do
let's,
something.
Let's spend that budget. You know,
like,
what I'm saying?
Well, spend the budget, sure, but it's like we, like, the imperial core for what, right?
Exactly.
Like, why are we? Like, as Bill Clinton said this. Who's the superpower here?
Uh huh.
You know what I mean? It's us.
Referring to Netanyahu.
Yes.
Explicitly referring to Israel. It's who's the superpower here?
Yeah.
We are the superpower. We are the strongest military in the world, bro. Come on.
They wouldn't exist without us in Western support.
Well, do you think Israel would dare shoot down an American plane?
Yeah, exactly.
You think they would dare do that? Oh, my God, man.
Yeah.
Absolutely ridiculous. But again, In this announcement, Biden continued to stress that he is actively trying to negotiate a ceasefire and hostage release with Qatar, Egypt, and Israel, but they're, by his own admission, continuing to stall out. He was hoping for a deal by Monday, which would be tomorrow as of when we're recording, but he just said flat out that's not going to happen. I wonder why.
Wait, so he was this when he was having the ice cream cone?
No, this is when he was meeting with Italy's okay. Prime Minister.
I thought of the ice cream cone because when he first said something about a ceasefire,
yes.
He was in an ice cream shop.
Classic.
Eating ice cream, and someone's like, hey, when's the ceasefire going to happen? And he said, hopefully by Monday.
Oh, that
while he's fucking licking an ice cream cone.
I think that was when he first said, hopefully by Monday, but he came out, I think, on Friday and said, yeah, that shit's not happening.
Well, actually. I didn't think that it would.
I didn't think it would either. That was a high hope.
Especially because right after that, Israel's like, he's not cooking. What the fuck is this old man saying?
Exactly. And then Israel said, we're going to do a massacre. We're going to do a history-defining massacre. We're going to mm-hmm. do a massacre so great that it will define generations and how they engage with politics.
And it will be in a textbook. Like, yes. The flower massacre?
Oh, my God.
Be so
God,
for
man.
Real.
But it's just like, these talks about negotiations seem so asinine, right? Uh-huh. At this point, I feel like we need to move past negotiating a ceasefire because negotiations can only happen when all parties involved are genuinely willing to come in good faith to make a compromise,
which Israel has never been.
Conflict. Israel has said explicitly they do not want to stop until Gaza is gone.
Yeah, yeah.
People in power in Israel have said we should just make Palestinians a fucking island and move them there.
Yeah.
Literal genocide, mind you. Genocide does not only have to be killing, which is something Israel wants to do and has been doing. Genocide can be cleansing people off of land,
yeah.
Removing entire populations of people from this place. Like,
and I think Netanyahu said something to the effect, like, we're not going to stop until Hamas is completely gone, which means they're going to keep going and going and going.
Yes, but when Hamas is the fucking UN,
yeah.
I don't think these are yeah. reasonable. I don't think these are smart goals.
Well, and Netanyahu also said in relation to that trying to stop Israel or impose some sort of like ceasefire deal would be tantamount to like allowing Israel to be destroyed.
Oh,
like you're
God.
Letting the
That's
terrorists
crazy.
Win
That's
type
crazy.
Shit.
That's crazy because it's just like at this point, a ceasefire doesn't need to be negotiated. It quite literally needs to be imposed.
Yes.
We quite literally need to gather as the most powerful fucking nation in the world
mm-hmm.
with the UN and the other super and just say, no.
Well, and we wouldn't be alone.
I'm saying China issued a condemnation. I think Russia issued a condemnation after a flower massacre.
Yeah.
Like, this is an event that is galvanizing so many people against this. And it's just, why are we fucking not moving our feet, bro?
I don't know if like China and Russia can be like, ayo, this is too much.
Real.
then I feel like, and I know they're probably doing it as like a wedge against us because they recognize Israel as,
for sure.
as our ally for the most part. But like if it's not just Russia and China, right? Like there's, I think it was like 150 countries voted for the ceasefire resolution that the United States didn't allow to pass through the Security Council.
We are going to continue to veto ceasefire resolutions while saying that we have our own because we have a ceasefire resolution that we drafted,
mm-hmm.
but we don't want to put it forth because we want to negotiate.
Mm-hmm.
Brother, these negotiations aren't working.
Yeah.
Israel is continuing. I feel like another important thing to just contextualize all of this and why this event is so baffling is January's ICJ ruling.
Yeah.
For those that don't remember, the International Court of Justice decided they would move forward with South Africa's allegations that Israel is doing genocide, meaning the ICJ ruled that in the interim, while they prepare for their years-long trial, it is probable that Israel is actively committing a genocide. With that, they issued a binding order that Israel take measured steps to mitigate civilian deaths, let aid in, and do a plethora of other things. And with that, they also said Israel has 1 month to document exactly mm-hmm. the steps that they are taking to let aid in, prevent civilian casualties, and to also stop doing those
yeah.
things. And it's as of when I wrote this, March 2nd, that 1 month is up.
Yeah, I thought so.
That Could 1 month is up. And I during this month, Israel continued to block aid, explicitly massacred civilians trying to receive aid, announced plans to invade Rafah at the start of Ramadan, attacked civilians in Rafah with airstrikes as a diversion, and more things that I probably wasn't even made privy to
mm-hmm.
because they're doing so much fuck shit.
Yeah, yeah.
To say the least.
It's absolutely insane. And I don't know the, I guess, process that the ICJ will take. But I think South Africa's got a pretty good argument that none of the provisions were followed at all.
None of the six binding provisions.
Maybe like, they got a document to
the
hand
ICJ
in.
Is an arm of the UN, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's basically what gives it its power. Like, basically binding by the United Nations that you have to do these things. I'm very interested to see how the ICJ is going to handle this situation.
Importantly, the U.S. can't veto it. So the U.S. can't step in and say, it is an American judge, I think, presiding over the case, but she was also the one, or one of the judges that helped to issue this, the binding order.
Yeah,
so
I'm confident, for, like, all of them.
I'm confident that she's not like a State Department plant type thing. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. But the only issue with the binding order is that the ICJ does not have enforcement mechanisms on its own.
Right.
So what I'm thinking is maybe once Israel comes through, now that the month is up, once the ICJ releases their fucking verdict for, like, because I'd have to imagine if they don't follow those provisional measures, ICJ is just like, all right, well, you're just fucking doing genocide then.
Mm-hmm.
One, because they are. And two, because that's a very easy way to, in my mind, fast track this year's long process. Like, they're not willing to follow any of these steps. Very plausible.
Yeah.
Very plausible that they're doing something that has to sway the U.S. That has to sway the State Department.
Yeah.
Once the ICJ comes and further condemns them, that has to sway the U.N.
Like, yeah.
By the U.N., I guess I just mean us. Like, yeah. It is all coming down to us on the Security Council.
Yeah, I mean, and if it's not like an established institution that follows the rules that can sway the United States, I don't know what is.
Oh,
you know
but
what I mean?
Literally.
Like, we know that the sort of, like, neoliberal favoritism of institutions is in service of, like, empire building. You know what I mean? Like, it's not actually, I guess I'd say, principled. It's more just in service of a broader U.S. project. But if it is a big deal to see the ICJ potentially come out with a decision that's opposed to what U.S. current U.S. foreign policy is. And if the U.S. were to just say, like, fuck it, and Israel were to just say, fuck it, I mean, what's the point?
That's a good way to make enemies of the entire world.
What's the point of having the institution if you could just say no? Yeah. You know what I mean?
If one country can just say no.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
Well, and it's like Russia has ignored ICJ rulings before, but, like, that's them.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, like Putin sucks.
Like that's Russia. And importantly, we didn't help them do that.
Yeah, exactly.
We didn't get behind them and say,
we probably condemned it.
Yeah, you can do it. We said,
probably
condemned it. You cannot do that. You can't do that.
They probably called what Russia was doing a genocide at one point.
That's true.
I'm sure they did.
Oh, my goodness, man. Yeah, it's just fundamentally absurd.
Yeah. I guess the last geopolitics thing is what happened with Aaron Bushnell.
Geopolitics brought home.
Yeah, geopolitics brought home. So for those of you that didn't see, I don't know how you wouldn't have seen. It was pretty big news last week.
Got blasted everywhere.
Yeah. There was a soldier, I believe, in the Air Force, 25-year-old white guy. He went in front of the Israeli embassy in D.C., and he self-immolated
in protest of
the genocide.
Something along the lines of, I will not be complicit in this genocide anymore, a couple other things. And then he lit himself on fire and screamed Free Palestine until he collapsed.
Yeah, yeah. And there's been tons of takes on this. Liberals and conservatives always ghoulish, you know what I mean? Like, we expect that from them. They're going to make fun of him or just ignore it completely. Some liberals have been pretty ghoulish, saying, like, he's glamorizing or romanticizing suicide or something like that. I don't think we're going to get copycat self-immolations.
No, I feel like letting yourself on fire is kind of like, it's a level of hardcore that I don't think people want to emulate.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, what he did wasn't, it wasn't just like suicide because he wanted to die.
Yeah.
It was an act of, it was a very extreme act of protest. Of course, don't go out and do this.
With historical precedent.
It was an extreme act of protest in service of a political program. It wasn't just him killing himself to kill himself.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Of course, don't go and do this.
No, absolutely
not. I'm not saying this is like a form of protest you should take on. But I think the broader critique, or the thing we should be focusing on as a country, is what it says about the state of where our people are, rather than what it says about this individual person. Because they'll try to say, oh, he was insane, he was crazy. Maybe. I don't fucking know.
Maybe, sure. Is this more crazy than what's happening in Palestine?
Exactly.
Like, I don't think it is. I don't think, that's not saying you should go do that. I would not advocate for anyone to go self-immolate in protest for this. Mm-hmm. I think that there are things that you can do being alive that are going to be more helpful. Does that mean what he did was, like, stupid or meaningless? No.
Yeah.
It's fulfilling the goal of bringing more attention to the issue.
Precisely.
Especially in a time where we have something like the Flower Massacre continuing to sway public opinion.
Yeah, I think as you said before, it's a historical form of protest that's been used many times before. Even in the United States, it's been used before for things like
a couple
climate
months
change.
Ago, somebody lit themselves on fire protesting Palestine as well.
Yeah,
it didn't get the coverage this one did.
And all, people have done it for, like, climate change. They've self-immolated. I think people have self-immolated in front of the Supreme Court before.
What?
every few years we get a story like someone lights themselves on fire because of X political reason.
Goddamn.
Yeah. It's a form of protest, but the reason isn't, again, it's not because he necessarily wanted to kill himself, or at least that's not the primary reason. It's because he wanted to get attention on an issue.
Yeah.
And I mean, he got attention. Well, I think
there's also the fact that he did feel complacent in this genocide. That felt like he needed to do this. But and that would be, I guess, the only way I could levy a critique on this is that you as individuals, you are not morally complacent in what's going on. We have no power in this.
Right. Yeah.
You are not morally complacent. As long as you are doing what you can and speaking out about what's happening, that is enough.
Mm-hmm.
That is enough.
Yeah. And you are far more useful to the Free Palestine movement or whatever other movements you belong to living.
Yes.
You can do a lot more alive right now than you would if you did something similar to this. So mm-hmm. don't go and do that.
No.
But just know, don't be a fucking ghoul when you see something like this happen, right?
Yeah.
It's a sign of the times more than it is indicative of him being mentally unwell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Really,
man.
Really bad discourse on a lot of that. Do you ever think, I want to buy my way into heaven?
Always.
I want to buy my way into the good graces of the people that I'm listening to in my ears right now.
That's right.
You can do that if you head over to patreon.com/headintheofficepod. And not only will you be supporting the show, not only will you mm-hmm. get early access to all of the content that we produce, but you'll also get an ad-free experience
That's
on the
right.
Patreon every Sunday, every time we release an episode.
You'll be able to pull up to the sermon on Sunday, mm-hmm. on the Lord's Day, to hear the gospel as it's spoken.
Yeah, no more being late, no more interruptions mid-episode if you're listening to this ad right now.
Exactly.
It's on patreon.com/headintheofficepod. It's one of the best ways to support the show. It's one of the longest enduring ways to support the show.
Help buy a pass from all the sins you've committed.
Mm-hmm.
Start coming to church.
Yeah.
And we can get things going.
Yeah, that's only if you head over to patreon.com/headintheofficepod. It's in the description. It's there for you.
Discourse on Twitter been crazy the last couple weeks.
Yeah, people just making giving insane takes that I would have took to the grave.
And then takes will continue into this next segment.
Oh my God,
the insane Twitter discourse, brother. Yeah. It's a cesspool.
Not as bad as Israel Palestine, but not good. Not good. Liberals are losing the battle of convincing people.
Absolutely, losing their fucking mind.
Like we make a point to stand on business here.
Yes,
you know we defend our principles. When we feel like we're right, we're not going to back down. We're going to defend them in good faith,
and we have.
But sometimes, seeing liberals react to elections makes me feel like I'd be a lot more comfortable just being an anti-election leftist.
Oh, you know, my God, I'm saying,
my life,
man,
would be so much easier.
I'm fucking saying.
I'm not gonna.
Because it's so easy to dunk on them.
Yeah.
And it's like, it just makes me think, like, okay, when we had our take that I still stand by.
Of course, well, that's correct.
Yeah, our correct take about electoralism. These are the people I'm getting lumped in with.
That sucks.
I did not say that shit. I did not say it like that. Oh my God.
Yeah. I guess we'll get into it, and then we'll get to liberals just being the most unbearable people on the planet. So last Tuesday, February 27th, Michigan, the great state of Michigan.
Yes.
Woo-hoo. Our home state of Michigan.
Great Lakes.
Held their primary for both the Democratic and Republican Party. Just the presidential primary. Nobody else on this ballot. So we have some results to talk about.
Love elections.
Much less interesting is the Republican side, which we'll talk about
first. For the first time.
Yeah, yeah. Not kind of what we expected, almost exactly what we predicted, but then more results came in.
That's why you come here.
Exactly. Donald Trump won the GOP primary in Michigan with about 68% of the vote to Nikki Haley's 26% of the vote. A wide margin, of course, for someone who's not an incumbent, but there's nuances for reasons we'll talk about. There were, interestingly, more than 1 million votes cast in this Michigan primary.
That's a lot.
For the GOP side, and then we had about 800,000 for the Democratic side. So, big numbers.
Big primary turnout.
Yeah.
Which is
like,
weird.
Not like previous years, especially for like Obama in 2012.
Especially on both sides having this massive primary turnout.
Right. Nikki Haley, again, did not win a single county in the state of Michigan. She gained four delegates, though, for her effort. She got four measly delegates. Trump gained 12 from the state of Michigan. As we'll talk about with Biden in a moment, the vote against, in air quotes, Trump is nothing to scoff at, right? Because you could think, or you could theorize, some people are theorizing, that the sort of 26% for Nikki Haley are votes that maybe don't go to Donald Trump in the general election. So it seems like he could have a sort of defector problem. But my stance, as I'll explain a little bit more later, is that the Republican Party, by the time we get to November, will consolidate. And I don't know if that's true about the Democrats, which is kind of the worrying part, right?
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I am inclined. I do think like a big like section of people who fucking want to go vote for Nikki Haley in a primary just would not want to vote for Trump. But yeah, you really never know. The GOP is notoriously good at consolidating.
Yeah. And we are not good at understanding the mind of a Republican, at least like the individual voter. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because we were like, well, who's going to vote for DeSantis? Some people did. He's gone now.
It's true.
But some people think DeSantis did well in those debates.
We didn't talk about South Carolina, did we?
We didn't have a chance.
Well,
yeah.
We don't have oh my God, Trump won.
Yeah,
a wide margin in South Carolina. That is old news. But I wonder, Nikki Haley must have won some counties in South Carolina, right?
Oh, I have no idea. I didn't get a chance to look at
that. Like, she must have, yeah?
I mean, Trump won. I can just pull up the results real quick.
Because if Nikki Haley didn't win counties in South Carolina, her home state she was governor in, has she won one county total?
I don't know. I know previously, before South Carolina, we talked about how she hadn't won a county yet.
She won one county in Iowa.
Johnson County, the Marxist
the
vote.
Marxist, the very first fucking primary. She won one county.
Okay, South Carolina, she did a little better. It was 60-40. She got 40%.
60-40, okay.
I don't see a map, though. So let's give her one.
Say we discount South Carolina, even though it's her home state, say we discount it, she's won one county so far.
She won one county, yeah.
She won one county in South Carolina?
Oh, no. Well, she won one county so far, Iowa.
Okay, all right.
I'm trying to find a map here. Oh, she won a couple of counties, yeah.
How many?
It looks like four or so.
Four.
Yeah, here's the map.
She's won five counties. She's won five counties across how many states?
Oh, geez, I don't know.
Iowa, South Carolina, Michigan, North Carolina, right? North Carolina?
North Carolina didn't
No,
go,
not
yeah.
North Carolina.
We had the four first states.
Arizona, Nevada. Or no Arizona?
No Arizona.
So Michigan, South Carolina, Iowa, Nevada.
I think it's just five then so far, if you count Michigan. Yeah.
What the fuck, man?
Isn't that crazy?
One county per state?
Yeah, it looks like Trump won quite a bit in South Carolina. Yeah, lost her home state, of course. We knew that. And we predicted that was going to happen.
Yes.
But then lost Michigan as well. It has a handful of counties on her back.
Man.
Which is pretty cool.
Literally a handful. I could fit all the counties she has in my hand.
I could count them on my fingers.
I could count them with one hand.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
And the South Carolina results were exactly what we said they would be, 60-40.
Oh, that's the one we...
And I think we said 60-40 for Michigan as well, but Trump had a much wider margin in Michigan than we thought that he would. Moving to the other side, though, Democrats.
So let's hop across the aisle.
Yeah, we're bipartisan. We criticize Democrats and Republicans, and we bring people together.
I criticize them from the middle, though. Like, I love sitting on the fence.
Me personally, I'm a reactionary now because of all the liberals
basically.
So in the Democratic primary in Michigan, Biden won with 81% of the vote. And uncommitted won 13% of the vote. And then under uncommitted, Marianne Williamson won 3%. Dean Phillips won a meager 2.7%. Now, there are about 800,000 votes cast in the Democratic primary here, which is quite a bit more than 2012 when Barack Obama was running as the incumbent. And uncommitted, it was just, for those that don't like know what I'm talking about, on the ballot, it had all the candidates, and then there was one box that said uncommitted.
Yeah, just an NA.
You could vote for uncommitted, right? Uncommitted won 100,000 votes and also won two delegates to the Democratic convention.
That's kind of sick.
So there's two delegates that are going to be
uncommitted,
required to be uncommitted. Yeah. Yeah. They're going to show up to the convention. Now, the discourse around this has been insane, nonsensical, vexing, frustrating. I don't know what word to put on it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, the question here really is, does this matter? Or in other words, what do these results tell us about Biden's position relative to the electorate in swing states like Michigan, right? Because the reason this is such a big deal, you know, if this happens in a state like California, Biden's going to win that anyway,
yes.
Right? There's no threat of him losing the primary. There's no threat of him losing a state like California. But Michigan, unfortunately,
it's a swing state.
Is considered to be a swing state.
Yeah.
Biden won pretty healthy in 2020, but in 2016, Trump won by a very slim margin over Hillary Clinton. And winning Michigan was one of the reasons that he was able to win the Electoral College, right?
It was a huge flip.
So it's a big deal for Biden, and any sort of semblance of voters being unwilling to vote for Biden in this upcoming election in the state of Michigan should be worrisome for him.
I think this margin, like the 100,000 votes that went away, I think that was like the margin he won Wayne County by, right?
I don't
in the general, or like there was some discourse about like some margin of uncommitted votes was equal to the margin that he won Wayne County, which basically won him the state.
Yeah, well, I think he won by a bit more than 100,000 in Michigan. He didn't struggle too hard in Michigan in 2020. But the thing,
well, that's because all the fake votes came in at 3 a.m.
Well, exactly. I was stuffing ballots back then. Yeah. Well, but the reason I don't like this line of argumentation is because the electorate will not look the same in 2024.
No, absolutely.
The reasons people will be motivated to vote in 2024 are going to be very different compared to 2020. Yes. And to say like, oh, well, Biden won with, I don't know, 125,000 votes, so he doesn't need to worry about these people. Uh-huh. To say that for 2024 is just extremely misguided.
No, that's the thing. I see a lot of people kind of like hand waving these results away. Yeah. Like things, and I feel like that's kind of asinine. Like this is kind of like, I was not expecting 100,000 people, 13% of the Michigan primary voters, to come out and vote uncommitted.
And it can't be a good sign, right?
No, absolutely can't be a good sign. The one thing that I saw that kind of like gets in the way, I guess, of that is that Rashida Tlaib's district, Dearborn, that district voted in a lesser the proportion of people that voted uncommitted in her district was less than other districts too.
Yeah.
Which is kind of weird because that's where the Palestinian population is sort of like concentrated.
Mm-hmm.
It's where,
and she is the only Palestinian American
exactly.
in Congress.
And she's the one who led this kind of push to do this, which I wasn't even aware of. Well, I'd have got on voted uncommitted.
The people who were kind of pushing for this, we had Mikhail Goodman on as a guest about a year ago or so. He was, he's still a city councilman, and he was helping push this as well. But it was a small campaign put together like 3 weeks, 2 weeks before the election, and their goal was to get 10,000 uncommitted votes.
Yeah.
They ended up getting 100,000 uncommitted
votes. Which it's like if I'd have known about this, I'd have talked about it. I'd have went and voted uncommitted.
Well, 100%.
Like, if there was, like, some more, like, it's amazing that this was organized so flippantly.
Yeah.
And was able to have such a massive turnout.
And to me, because if they would have had more time, if they would have focused on this more, then to me, it suggests that they could have gotten a much larger result.
Absolutely.
And that their only constraint was time and, I guess, maybe willpower. But it seems like the willpower is there. You know what I mean?
Especially when they only expected 10,000 and they 10x that. That's insane. Yeah. And I don't think it can mean anything good for Biden.
Yeah, yeah. So before getting into before we get to more of our optical takes on the matter and talk about what other people are saying, we should break down where these uncommitted votes came from, because I think that's pretty important. So to receive delegates, which uncommitted did, it got two delegates from Michigan, a candidate must get 15% statewide or 15% of the vote in a single congressional district. Uncommitted received more than 15%. I think it was 17% in the 12th district and the 6th district. The 12th district is represented by Rashida Tlaib, as we said, the only Palestinian American in Congress. In the 6th district, and that encompasses like Ann Arbor, that area, like Livingston County and stuff like that. The 6th is represented by Debbie Dingell of the Dingell, Michigan family political dynasty.
Oh,
the Dingell family.
The Dingell dynasty.
The Dingell dynasty.
Amazing.
Yeah. Debbie has called for a ceasefire. She did that recently. In a statement that she put out, I think this was just like a week ago or so. So she's not completely horrible, but I don't know. I wasn't able to find what she had been doing before that.
Is that Washtenaw County?
I don't know exactly.
Livingston County
is
as red as hell.
Yeah,
I think
don't expect them to help.
Livingston, red as hell.
But so those two districts voted about 17% for the uncommitted vote. The performance in these two districts, as I said, netted two delegates for uncommitted. The highest density of uncommitted votes came from Dearborn, Dearborn Heights, and Hamtramck. These are all counties with high proportions of Arab and Muslim populations compared to the rest of Michigan. And it's sort of, if you're from Michigan or from around Michigan, there's this mantra, or I guess just saying, where it's like, people will ask, why are there so many Arabs in Dearborn? And you just say, because there's Arabs in Dearborn. There's not a reason.
Yeah.
It just is. You know what I mean?
It's just how things kind of worked out.
Yeah. There's no like reason for it. It's just like a thing in the state of Michigan. But this doesn't mean, really quickly, that it's only Arab Americans that drove the uncommitted vote.
Yes, which is a very important
thing
to point out.
Because there was a map that the Washington Post, I think either the Washington Post or New York Times put out, where they showed the kind of density of votes, which was centered around Hamtramck, Dearborn, and Dearborn Heights. And then they showed the like population density of where Muslim Americans are. Mm-hmm. And you can see that the uncommitted vote is spread way more out across Wayne County than Arab American populations are, which suggests that there's more than just the Arab communities voting for uncommitted here. Mm-hmm. It isn't just being driven by people that sort of resonate with the struggle of Palestinians. It's young people, it's other voters of color, or just voters generally upset with how Biden is handling not only Israel and Gaza, but also any other issue that they could be angry about. So for anybody to say like, oh, it's just Muslims in Michigan voting against Biden, it's not. It's more people that are angry at
him. This isn't a general. These are Democratic voters.
Yes.
Like, these are people that otherwise would vote for Biden.
Mm-hmm.
Or, well, somebody within the Democratic Party.
Yeah, yeah. And I've seen some arguments that say this is sort of an anomaly, and that these voters are, for the most part, motivated by what's happening in Gaza. Otherwise, they'd be low propensity voters, meaning that they're not likely to turn out generally for elections, mm-hmm. not just general elections, but like they're not likely to vote in general. They're just kind of voting based on this one issue.
Yeah.
I don't know. I haven't seen convincing evidence for that. And given that it's not just Muslim voters
especially when it's coming out. Spread so wide.
Yeah. It's not just Muslim voters coming out and voting uncommitted.
You got the Dingles.
It's a bigger problem than people want to admit. Yeah, yeah. You got the Dingle family dynasty.
You got the Dingle dynasty, man.
Yeah. It doesn't seem like a good sign. And I've been kind of grossed out by people seeming to suggest like, oh, it's just Muslims that are mad.
Well, yeah,
just Arabs that are mad.
It's saying it's just Muslims that are mad. And then also so many liberals on Twitter connecting that with, oh, all the fucking people who voted uncommitted are terrorists who just want Trump to win.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
The
headlines have been crazy. Like it's like a portion of the 9/11 fervor is back. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, and it's like, if I'd have known about this effort, I'd have gone out and voted uncommitted. I just didn't fucking vote in the primary. I was like, Joe Biden's going to win anyway. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I think I wrote in ceasefire like a month ago.
Because that's what the cool kids were doing a month ago.
Precisely. I thought the cool kids were writing in ceasefire. I wrote in ceasefire and bubbled in the write-in. I didn't know we were voting uncommitted.
Not your vote. It's not even showing up in these percentages.
Like, yeah, I voted in my home district absentee. I did this way ahead of time because I knew I wasn't going to be able to get to the polling place on election day. And before I knew it, they organized a separate campaign.
Ridiculous.
And now I'm lame.
It's absolutely ridiculous.
Now I'm not
cool. This
dude's
old news now. Yeah.
God damn it. So I want to break down sort of how this is being compared to previous elections, and then we can get into like the liberals calling Muslims terrorists for their position here. So Obama did have a similar percentage in the 2012 elections. Remember, he's running as an incumbent in the primary, generally unopposed, although there may have been some nobody running against him, right? Mm-hmm. Obama had a similar percentage of votes for uncommitted in 2012, about 15%. But the turnout was far lower. Only about 20,000 votes were voting for uncommitted in 2012.
Okay.
This time, as we said, 100,000 people turned out to vote in a February where it's a presidential primary. And of course, there's an incumbent running in the party that's doing this, right? 100,000, as we said, nothing to scoff at. It shouldn't be treated as something that you can just dismiss. And people comparing it to Obama, again, I think are a little bit misguided because, one, political environment has changed so drastically in 12 years. And also, the turnout is far higher
for this election. The numbers just don't match up.
Yeah.
Like, you can't compare the percentages without considering, like, the actual raw number of people that are coming out and turning out.
Yeah. And the threat here isn't that, like, Biden loses to uncommitted. Even if this inspires, like, in Pennsylvania or Wisconsin or other swing states, even if this inspires more people to vote uncommitted and uncommitted gains some steam, maybe they get 20%, 25% in a state or whatever, the worry isn't that Biden is going to lose to the uncommitted vote and then be kicked out and the DNC appoint somebody new. Like, that's not what people are concerned about. The thing that we should be focused on is that it suggests weakness in the general election electorate.
Yeah.
It suggests that he's going to have a problem getting these voters who are coming out during a primary, maybe voters who weren't going to vote in a primary, to vote against him solely because they don't like him.
Yeah.
That seems like an issue to me. It doesn't seem good. Like,
they are just not going to turn out in the general.
Right.
Should things not change.
Or vote third party, right?
And I guess the fear here, vote third party. They're not going to turn out in the general either way.
Yeah.
I guess the fear here is that Biden just doesn't see this as like whatever. He just sees that these people are never going to vote for me in general.
Mm-hmm.
And he just keeps going on this course that he's on instead of deciding to actually change his policy
and
do something better.
I think I've heard there's been leaks or reports or whatever that some of the Biden staffers are just like, well, we can win without the Muslim vote. And it's like,
come on.
Well, also, bad thing to say.
Yeah,
looks
awful
terrible
thing to say. We can turn our back on an entire population of people.
Right, exactly. And statistically, maybe it's true if you're using 2020 data. But again, I think the electorate's going to be so different and the motivations are going to be so different. And far less people will be galvanized to vote against Trump the same way they did in 2020.
I was going
to
say
that you can't, you literally can't just write off an important electorate in a swing state. You can't do that.
It's like, I don't, maybe this is unfounded, but I feel like margins are going to be slimmer, a mm-hmm. lot slimmer in 2024 for who wins what states. And I feel like turnout's definitely, we're not going to have the record turnout we had in 2020.
Yeah.
A lot of that record turnout was attributed to unprecedented access to mail-in voting, mm-hmm. which is not really there anymore.
And it's been rolled back, yeah.
It's been rolled back. So that's just a flat number of people who will not vote.
Right.
Who just, it will not be as convenient for them to get out. We are not going to see the turnout we did. And that mail-in voting is largely responsible for Democrats winning a lot of states.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, it's 2024 is going
to
be weird.
Yeah, not even to mention, like, well, of course, again, you can't just write off an entire population, an entire electorate. But also, like, you know, we're just talking about strategy here. They're right. You know what I mean? Like if what they're angry about is Gaza, and a lot of people are, they're right to be mad at you.
Yeah.
And they're right to vote uncommitted. This is the safest way to do it. In a primary, not when you're not doing it in the general election where you could, you know, hand the election over to Donald Trump or some other reactionary, the best place to do it in our current electoral system is during the primary. That's what we've said a billion times before. How can you get mad at these people when they're doing it in the safest, most responsible way?
That is like the chance that you have to just be blatantly just know you fucking suck.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna let you know that, and I'm gonna let you know that you're in danger here.
Yeah.
And this is how we exercise that political power.
Right. Morally, they're correct to do this, but also in terms of strategy, I think it's a bad idea for liberals to either dismiss this or act like they can just to take the position where it's like we can just win without the Muslims. Like, that's weird.
Ridiculous.
That's weird and bad strategy.
Fucking insane. Yeah, yeah. Oh my goodness.
There's been some takes from some liberals that I've seen that say the media is sort of unfairly covering the margin of Biden to uncommitted compared to the margin of Trump to Haley, right? So the story is Trump beats Haley, dominates in South Carolina, Michigan, and so on, whereas Biden is challenged by uncommitted despite the margin being bigger for Biden.
Yeah,
how do you,
like,
feel about this?
But, like, dominating uncommitted is a little like
it's nobody.
It's nobody. Oh my God, you won when there were no other options.
Yeah.
It's a little different. It's also the fact that this is unexpected.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone knew Nikki Haley had no chance.
Mm-hmm.
She absolutely no chance. Maybe she underperformed a little bit compared to what people thought she was going to do. I thought she might have cracked 30.
Yeah.
To be fair, but still, that's not a story.
Yeah.
That's exactly what we thought was going to happen. Nobody thought uncommitted was going to get 100,000 people.
Yeah, I think expectations are a big deal. Also, of course, as you said, uncommitted not being a real person.
Yeah.
Nikki Haley's a real person. Uncommitted is not a real person. It's literally nobody.
Uncommitted didn't campaign.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the other thing is that a lot of the time we talk about Trump as if he is the incumbent because he sort of gets an incumbent advantage having been the president before. But it's important to note that he isn't, right? Yeah. Like, theoretically, the election was up for grabs for anybody from the beginning, but Trump has been dominating. Vivek has dropped out. DeSantis has dropped out. Nikki Haley's the only one left. Super Tuesday, we're about to talk about it. Coming up, Nikki Haley's probably going to drop out after that because Trump's going to win every single state again. Biden, though, is literally the incumbent, and we weren't expecting 100,000 people to turn out in a swing state to vote against him, ostensibly for Gaza, but maybe for other things as well. And I don't think it's unfair coverage for media like CNN, AP, us, and so on. I don't think it's unfair for them to say, like, this represents a weakness, and Trump is also winning the GOP primary pretty handedly.
To say it is just massive fucking cope.
Yeah.
Like, I can't imagine the copium that they are huffing in the stew.
Yeah, it's bad.
Oh, my goodness.
It's bad. It's there's no way to get around that this is bad for Joe Biden. And again, as I said before, I think Trump and Biden both have defector issues, right? Mm-hmm. Because people are voting for Nikki Haley. You could consider at least some portion of that to be a sort of protest vote against Donald Trump. People obviously are voting uncommitted against Joe Biden or voting for Marianne or Dean or whatever. And that represents a sort of protest vote against Biden. It's hard to predict how these voters will act in the general election. And it just seems to me like they're both going to have issues with keeping their base together. But again, I think that Donald Trump's going to have an easier time consolidating than Biden will.
For sure. Because like the issue with the defectors is it's like, okay, for at least within the Republican Party, are the people who are voting for Nikki Haley, are they more likely to vote for Biden rather than not turn out?
Right.
I don't really know if you can answer that question and have like actual sound data to build it upon. I guess my biases would say that, yeah, maybe some Nikki Haley voters would be more likely to vote for Biden just based on how she's been trying to kind of play moderate.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know.
Especially if she comes out and endorses Trump at some point.
Yeah.
Like, I think that Donald Trump will be fine recuperating a lot of the votes that Nikki Haley was getting throughout the primary.
Yeah.
I don't think that'll be as much of a problem, especially because they're not concerned with shit like Gaza. Like, there's no massive wedge issue in their party right now like there is with the Democratic Party.
But there's also the issue of, like, at least with the people who aren't going to vote for Biden, they're just not going to turn out.
Yeah.
I can't see someone who's not voting for Biden because of Gaza saying, oh, well, I'm going to go and vote for Donald Trump then.
Mm-hmm.
I need to make sure this guy gets out of office. That just doesn't happen.
Yeah. So liberals, little bit silly. I don't think it's necessarily unfair coverage. And the last thing that we kind of already alluded to is, and I wish I was exaggerating when I say this, there have been people posting, at least I've seen after the results came out, that if you're voting uncommitted, you're basically a Trump-loving fascist.
That's
you're
crazy.
Fucking nuts, dog.
That's crazy. What are you supposed to do in a primary?
Yeah.
What are you supposed to do? Is a primary not the perfect time to voice your concerns?
Right.
Come on now. This is why we have the system.
That's why I kind of voiced my frustration at the beginning with, you know, it would just be easier for us to be anti-electoralism and to just not talk about it altogether.
To be lumped in with these people? Oh, my God.
Because, like, this sort of visceral reaction to people being upset with your guy just further polarizes people against you.
Yeah.
Like, why are you not taking a moment to, like, reflect and think maybe there are some real weaknesses for Joe Biden that we need to address?
God,
but no. instead, you're just saying, like, oh, you're literally a terrorist, which is, like, coded language, to be sure.
Especially with this issue?
It makes you look bad. It makes the blue MAGA accusations feel real.
Exactly.
Like, what are you doing?
And it's like, that's not me. I'm not part of this.
I am for strategic voting, not for whatever the fuck these people are pushing. It's not good.
Oh, my God.
It's not good.
Voting, not a moral choice.
Yeah.
Not a moral choice.
Also got to say, nobody beating Dean and Marianne. Crazy.
That is crazy.
We dunked on Nikki Haley for losing to no one.
We got to give fair coverage.
We got to give fair coverage. Dean Phillips and Marianne Williamson lost to nobody.
Dean Phillips, a sitting
House member, yeah.
House member.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who's already proven that they can be elected.
Uh-huh.
Lost to no one.
Yeah. And lost to Marianne as well.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that too.
and Marianne took this as evidence that she's getting her get back because she rejoined the presidential race.
She dropped out.
We talked about, she suspended her campaign, which is legal terms for I can still accept donations, but I'm not doing anything right now.
Oh, legal terms for money laundering.
That's what every candidate, like DeSantis suspended, Vivek suspended.
Okay.
Just in case, you know, their zombie of a campaign is resurrected.
Yeah, just in case those people didn't go through and uncheck their monthly donation box, they could still get that money in.
Yeah, because if you end the campaign, then you got to stop everything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Okay. Uh-huh.
But Marianne's back. She says, I'm coming back. 3%, that's a huge victory for us. So she's back on she's back on the campaign trail. Big news.
Can't wait to see what comes of that. I bet her staff is really upset that she's back on the campaign trail.
Oh, yeah. They're like, God, fucking damn it.
Her staff thought they were finally going to fucking get away from her, abusive behavior? Oh, my God, man.
Also, in other election news, Super Tuesday is going to be happening a day before this episode comes out for everybody on March 5th, I believe.
Always.
Tuesday of this week.
Always.
So we don't have those results right now. We could pretend, though. We could say, oh, my God, Trump won every state. Oh, my God.
Trump won every state.
Uncommitted sweep, 70% of the vote.
Fucking Biden won pretty much every state. Some people didn't vote for him.
Yeah.
Marianne Williamson dropped out again.
Yeah. So Super Tuesday is important, of course, because this is where the plurality of states are going on this day. I think 36% of all delegates are up for grabs, at least for the GOP. So it's going to be basically what decides the election here, if it's not already decided. Nikki Haley has already promised to stay through Super Tuesday. She said that after South Carolina, I believe. So maybe we see the Trump endorsement on Wednesday.
Maybe she could cop another handful of counties.
Mm-hmm.
You think what's the over under on her getting like five counties?
I'm not sure, but I think California is going. So maybe that's where she gets some counties.
Oh, you know,
I mean, California,
true.
Big state, liberals there.
Big state, lots of counties. There are some crazy Republicans there, too.
Many counties, big counties, the biggest counties.
The biggest counties. Oh, my God, beautiful counties. I love those counties.
I went to California, said, oh, my God, these are beautiful counties.
Oh, my God, what a big county, what a big, beautiful, bountiful. Oh, my God, these counties don't just fall out the sky, you know.
So keep a lookout for Super Tuesday. And also in some final election news, New York, for some reason, the state of New York, just handed Republicans an absolute fucking dub because they had a district map that was, I'll say, auspicious for Democrats.
Yeah.
You know how redistricting happens every 10 years. They had a new district map following 2020, the census. They had an auspicious map, and they just redrew it and gave Republicans a better chance to win those seats for no real reason.
I swear to God.
First
they get New York, the city, gets a conservative mayor.
Mm-hmm.
And then they do this shit. Oh, my God, man.
They want to lose.
We might lose the last bastion of liberalism.
New York goes red?
God damn.
New York goes red?
God damn. That's so fucking crazy.
Yeah. Moving on from elections, though, I guess we could talk about some extra news stories before we head out. I'll do the second one first. McConnell giving up power. He's old.
Before GTA 6?
Yeah.
Whew, yeah. That's crazy.
For those that don't know, Mitch McConnell has said that this will be his last term as the Senate Majority Leader. And I think he's stepping down in December or something like that.
Yeah. And I don't know if he's going to run again, but his term's not up for a while still.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe, I mean, his corpse could win in Kentucky.
True. That's
despite
true.
Him being the most unpopular senator in
the country. 13% approval rating.
Yeah.
Fucking sweeps every election. Whatever, though. I do think it's crazy. I do think it kind of points out what we talked about a couple weeks ago with Rahm McDaniel and the GOP kind of putting all of their eggs in the Trump basket.
Mm-hmm.
We're starting to lose. Not that Mitch McConnell was ever like a good faith conservative, famous for just massive obstructionism and stopping the government any possible way, throwing a fit. And a temper tantrum at his big age. But I feel like this is just further consolidation into the Freedom Caucus types.
Yeah, because Mitch McConnell was a party stooge, right?
Yes.
Like, all he did was just, he understood how power works, and he fucking wielded that shit.
And that's the thing. He genuinely cared about, I guess, conservative strategy and winning as a conservative.
And he was good at it.
I'll give him his flowers, I guess.
He was good at it. But even he had limits because he recognized what Trump was doing was going beyond what, I don't know, was good for the party, what was best for the party. Not that he ever resisted Trump in a real, I don't know, confident way. But there were moments where you could see the cracks, right?
Yeah.
Where he, after January 6th, basically blamed it on Donald Trump. There were a couple other moments where he opposed Donald Trump to some degree. Mitch McConnell, of course, is a demon in human skin, but I think represents another sort of shift in the party.
Mm-hmm.
And Trump doesn't like Mitch McConnell.
Absolutely.
And a lot of conservatives that are like MAGA supporters don't like Mitch McConnell.
Yeah. And I feel like it's also just like another reason why 2024 is going to end up being such an important general election too.
Yeah.
Because again, like if Trump loses, I don't see the GOP necessarily being able to come back in the next 4 years.
Yeah, what
and
do they do?
Have the same strength that they've had under Trump, have the same like fervor to go with this guy and have so much policy aligned. And then Joe Biden had to fuck it all up.
Yeah.
with his Gaza policy. It's just politics.
Man, I think it was like our first debate live stream back in August or maybe the second one. I was like so confident. I was like, I'm feeling good. Like if Joe Biden, you know, Joe Biden's got a lot of flaws. This was before Gaza. I was like, Joe Biden's got a lot of flaws, but, you know, it's looking good with abortion and a couple of other issues. Then he just fucked it up.
He threw the game away. This fucking guy. this fucking guy. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, and Republicans, you know, maybe the presidential election doesn't look too good for him, but the Senate map looks fantastic for Republicans. I think the best states Democrats got, like the most likely to win in, are Montana and Texas.
Wow.
Yeah, the rest of them are not good competitions. Like, for winning new seats, I mean.
Yeah, I know.
Man,
it's fucked up,
It's looking bad.
It's fucked up. It's fucked up.
Ted Cruz is up for election, so that'll be a fun campaign to cover. Ted Cruz versus whoever is going to be the competitor.
I don't know how much. It seems like the only thing Democrats have to message on, which, to be fair, conservatives are going a bit crazy, is abortion.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much that's going to
Help
them
is that going to break
carry
through?
Them over the line
we'll see.
Everything is stacking up against this guy.
Well, I got one thing that could cut through the sort of culture and anger about Gaza.
Yeah.
Biden fucks.
Oh, did you see this? True. The key. What's the key to a happy marriage?
Uh huh.
Oh said, my god, it's a great sex life. It's getting down and dirty in the sheets, bro.
Oh, this is perfect.
Talk about the fucking White House. Oh my god.
Fluff story.
Uh
huh. Double entendre. Fluff story. You know what I'm saying? But absolute fluff story. There's no way in hell that like this is genuine in any capacity. Maybe a younger, more spry version of Biden would have said something like this, but be so for real, dog. No,
absolutely not.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. And then there was coverage about how, Jill was mad that he said this. This is just to take your mind off Gaza.
Like,
100%. This is just to obfuscate all the awful things that are happening over
there. Yeah, and it's to make him seem younger. You know what I mean? It's to make him seem less old than he really is a way to appeal to people.
Even just like on that topic of like making Biden seem younger, and just another reason why we are in such an awful state with the two people who are the only people that can win the primaries,
mm-hmm.
the two people that are functionally the party's representatives going into the general, Trump and Biden. Every day I see like three fucking stories that are like liberals trying to compensate for all of the attacks that Biden gets for being old and very like not mentally there.
Yeah.
With like, I saw one today. It was like, Trump stuttered twice in his speech today. These are the two words that Trump mixed up in his speech.
Yeah.
Shut the fuck up, please.
Yeah. The problem is like, Trump says crazy shit. We know he says crazy shit. That's never been a problem for Republicans. And also the no you response, I don't think is really
going to
work.
It's always weak. It was weak when Chaya Raichik did it.
Yeah.
And it's weak when liberals do it.
The no you response just isn't effective. And I think they know this. Like Democratic strategists, not a real job, but I think they know this. And I think the response they'll probably go with is to try to make Biden seem younger. And I think this is an example. Is like, yeah, he's old, but I think he literally said, I'm old, but my ideas are young. Some shit like that.
This shit old people say.
Yeah, shit old people say. But yeah, Biden is out here and he fucks apparently.
Oh my god, speaking of people who fuck.
Oh.
Speaking of people who get down fucking dirty in the sheets, you know, people in the streets, mean in the sheets, you know what I mean?
Oh,
we
got
to give a special thanks to Caden Kraut, Lord Tyler Radiant, Chris the Postman, Christy Beck, 40% Spite, Dylan B., Andrew Harris, Mike Chaplinski, Mattias T., Omar Zuno, Clayton LaFed, Mark Yeager, Kaz, Caleb Joy, Rich Toro, Tari, Gavin Mayer Maldonado, Hunter W., Fergalaki, Max Vezquez, Jacob Rogers, Colton Mooberry, Fixer Punk, Jim Egbers, Jeff Muzzy, Big Burrito, Cincy Alex, Joe Stenstrom, Adrian Sandoval, Chloe Sam 601, Colleen Cutts, Veryuk, Jennifer DeVoe, Big Bird Titty, Crawfishin, Benneth Bennington III, Alexia Benanti, Nietzsche, Big Booty Beatdown, Sam Maloney, Two Headed Boy, Ben Shapiro's Boyfriend, Jonathan Cassis, Luke O'Shea, Cucker Tarlson, Danielle Jackson, The Word of Microsoft, Jennifer Science, Aaron and His Gundamn Gundams, Darth Father, Tailored for Content, Corey Chambers, Sewer Snack, Elian, John Glover, Devin Hatchard, Retro Mondo, Emma the Dude Slayer, Veronica, aka V, Raxon, Ash Smith, The Grotler, Flower Clown, Beetlebugs, Murder in a Trench Coat, Lonnie Rogers, Slavic and Sapphic, Casey Lynn Kelly, Snake Eyes, In Hope of Giants, AK Gone, Aquana Don, Zach Lantian, Info Russell, Austin Greif,
Marcus Corbett, Caleb Roper, Taylor Rensock, Ishi Teddy, Cammy, Tylan Freeman, Steak Daddy, Tay Tay, Isaac Hodges, Madeline C, Pab the Pab 69, Kayla Lowe, Anna Valenik, Eduardo Diaz, Casey C, Say Yes to Wes, August, Particular Pickman, Sir Capalot, Jeff Sines, Howard the Duck, Brennan his Egg, JR, Drew Batchilder, Froggy Gumdrop, Zen doing their best, Jackie Boy, Shameless, Coherent Babbles, Sasha, MJ is Sharp, Michaela Muncy, The Wallace 3000, Southwest Socialism, Jared Finch, Evil Vegan, Tactical Snowflake, Son of Ander, Vanilla Bryce, Willie Swags, Chris E., Kashan Lala, Amanda R., Hanky Panky, Tyler J., Damian Blues, Real Nurse RN, Ashley White, Dick Cheney in 3-inch heels, Lalo Valesco, Particulon, Memfrez, and My Mom. Thank you all so much for supporting the show on Patreon. If your name isn't on this list,
you don't fuck.
Patreon.com/headintheofficepod. Real fuckers go there.
Exactly. If you wanna fuck, headintheofficepod.com/ patreon.com/headintheoffice. You know exactly what to do.
If you want to be just like Joe Biden, just like Joe Biden.
Every single thing implication that comes along with that.
Then don't go to Patreon. That's not where you'll be like Biden. But if you want to fuck, Patreon.
Patreon, come on.
I love you.
That's what I'm saying. If you want a great sex life, head on over to Patreon.